Well, could everyone here who is married or who would like to get married raise your hands? Well, that seems to be most of you. Have you ever wondered why you got or want to get married? Does anyone want to offer any of the reasons they would like to get married or have gotten married?
Found someone worth marrying?
Burning with passion. Mm-hmm. No one else? There are lots of reasons. I got married because I'd fallen desperately and madly in love with Michelle. In fact, the other day she reminded me of the time when she asked me what my goal in life was, and I told her that it was actually to marry her. And she said, "Well, what are you going to do after that?" And I said, "Oh, I'll just enjoy you, I suppose." Some people want to get married so that they can have children. Others think that it will be good to get married because they will have someone to financially support them if they go into full-time ministry, and that this is a sensible thing to do. Others perhaps because they want to see what the real fuss is about sex. And for Christians, marriage is really the only option. Some maybe think that it's the natural progression of life, that it isn't good for a man to be alone, or a woman for that matter, that one isn't complete without a partner, that that is the way our Lord intended it. Perhaps, though, the other side of the question needs to be asked. Who here wants to remain single? No one? No one wants to remain single. Well, is that just a silly question? Paul doesn't seem to think so. Paul actually has a preference as to whether one should prefer to be single or married. When you are listening to Michelle read verses 25 to 40, what's the general impression that you got? Do you think Paul was encouraging people to marry or to remain single? Have a brief glance through it again. What's the general impression you got from the passage? I know that when I was single and I read this passage, I was so hoping that it would encourage me to pursue marriage that I constantly approached it with qualifications. I had the general impression that Paul would prefer me to remain single, and it made me slightly uneasy. I didn't want to remain single, I wanted to get married. What is Paul actually saying here, and does it even apply to us today? In 1 Corinthians 7, Paul is caught between the tension of affirming marriage to a church that's against it, but knowing that singleness is better for them. If married, he wants them to remain married, happily. If single, it is better for them to remain single and not seek a spouse. He wants the church to remain as they are, to not worry about marriage and changed social circumstances, but to be totally devoted to the Lord. In essence, he agrees with them that it is better to not marry, but not for any of the reasons that they think. These reasons are not just specific to the Corinthian church, but are applicable to us today and are worthy of much thought and perhaps much change in attitude. Tonight we're going to look at the attitude of the Corinthian church to marriage and Paul's advice to them. Then we will look at the basis for Paul's advice, that he wants them to remain as they are. We will then look at what that means for single people and why it does apply to us. The pressure in the Corinthian church is to not marry. It is against marriage. If one wasn't married, one shouldn't. And if one is, then perhaps it is wise to separate and have nothing to do with your spouse that's associated with marriage. The Corinthian church, it's a flower power church. It's a church of the 60s. Marriage is really not a good thing. But sex, we're to be free and liberated. We're to go for it. And we saw a couple of weeks ago that the Corinthian church couldn't be confused with a church who wasn't just that little bit keen to have sex. We saw Michael explain that from chapter 6. Why? Why is this? Why do they have this view of marriage? Why is marriage not a good thing? Because marriage is part of this order, part of this world. It has nothing to do with the next. As Jesus said, in the next world there will be neither giving nor taking in marriage. And the Corinthians consider themselves part of the next order. They're part of the kingdom of God, the heavenly kingdom. They've made it. As they are so spiritual, and they're in the next world, it doesn't matter who they sleep with, as long as they're not bound in marriage. But why do I think that the pressure in the Corinthian church is against marriage and marital relations? If you look again at your Bible, notice in verse 28, that if you should marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin should marry, she has not sinned. Paul is reinforcing the fact that marriage is not a sin. Why would he bother if marriage was viewed normally? Later we will look at the example Paul addresses in verses 36 and following. If a man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly toward his virgin, etc., if it must be so, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let them marry. They want to get married, but they can't because the pressure from the powers that be is that marriage involves one in sin, that it's wrong. The first 16 verses of chapter 7 paint a vivid picture of the situation in the Corinthian church, the pressures that it's facing. And we'll look at them now in a little bit of detail. We'll only be brushing over it, so feel free to ask questions at the end. Let's read 7, verses 1 to 7. Now concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. But, because of immoralities, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband fulfil his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, and come together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But this I say by way of concession, not of command, that I wish that all men were even as I myself am. However, each man has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. Paul receives a letter. The Corinthians have argued that it is not good for a man to touch a woman, have sexual relations with her. Paul quotes them and agrees to a certain extent. However, he puts a massive disclaimer in. But because of immoralities, present sexual sins in the church, as Michael spoke of, if you are married, look at verse 5, don't deprive one another. Unless you both agree, it isn't for long and it's for prayer. But even then, Paul doesn't want to encourage that. It's not a command, it's a concession. The picture is clear. Married couples are abstaining from sex. It is indeed a very strange church, this Corinthian church. This is like soccer fans abstaining from watching the World Cup. It's rather ridiculous. It's very warped and it's unnatural. Simeon, you would agree it? It is strange for a soccer fan to not. Yeah. Not only that, people who want to marry and should marry aren't. Look with me at verses 8 and 9. But I say to the unmarried and to widows that it is good for them if they remain even as I. But if they do not have self-control, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn. These people are most likely widowers and widows. There's no Greek word for widower, so Paul uses the term unmarried. And Paul is even-handed in this passage. He's consistent. He deals with speaking specifically to both men and to women. It stands to reason that he's dealing with widowers and widows here. But, however, the important thing is that these people have no self-control. They're not struggling with passion. But they've succumbed to it. They have no self-control. They are engaging in sexual relations. They're not getting married. And because of it, they are burning in shame. The NIV, some people might have, says in passion. And it's not there. It is actually to burn. And looking at the way Paul uses that, it's more to do with sexual shame. They're shameful about what they have to do. They're not allowed to get married. What's Paul's exhortation to the church? Let them marry. That's what he wants them to do. If they are widowers and widows, things are bad enough already. They've already lost a spouse. Why force this upon them because of misguided views of marriage and sex? So first they want to do away with sex in marriage. They also want to prevent people who should marry from marrying. And finally, they go so far as to want to separate. Look at verses 10 to 16. But to the married I give instructions, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, let her remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband. And that the husband should not send his wife away. But to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever, and she consents to live with him, let him not send her away. And the woman who has an unbelieving husband, and he consents to live with her, let her not send her husband away. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her believing husband. For otherwise your children are unclean, but now they are holy. Yet, if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. For how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? Paul forbids Christian married couples, on the basis of the Lord's teaching as well, not to separate. He does have another pseudo-qualification there. It isn't really a qualification. If you do separate, you either stay single or you go back to your original partner. He then deals with those who have unbelieving spouses. They're perhaps using it to break up their marriage because it is a tainted marriage. It is making people unholy in some way. Paul refutes that idea by suggesting the exact opposite. There is no tainting, only blessing and possibly salvation for the unbelieving partner. As an aside, Paul in no way condones Christians marrying unbelievers. If you look with me at verse 39 and 40, a wife is bound as long as her husband lives, but if her husband is dead, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord, but in my opinion, she is happier if she remains as she is. So, marriage is for life, but if widowed, you're free to marry, but only in the Lord, only a Christian. But, says Paul, he thinks it's better if you stay single. So, the Corinthians don't think marriage is a good thing. It's actually a worldly thing, and perhaps even a sinful thing. So they are making the best to avoid it. On what basis does Paul refute all this? What is the principle that Paul is working with here? He spells it out in verse 17, which is really the key verse for the whole of chapter 7. Only as the Lord has assigned to each one, as God has called each, in this manner let him walk, and thus I direct in all the churches. The principle is to remain as you were called. If you were called married, stay married. Enjoy all the benefits of marriage, including sex. Don't change the way you relate to one another in your marriage because you are Christian, because you are of the next world, that you're spiritual now. If abstinence doesn't actually promote holiness and godliness, it opens an avenue to sin. Nor does separation gain you better access to God or allow you to remain more holy. To illustrate the basic principle in a different way, Paul uses the example of circumcision and uncircumcision, slavery and freedom. Look with me at verses 17 and 24. Only as the Lord has assigned to each one, as God has called each, in this manner let him walk, and thus are direct in all the churches. Was any man called already circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. How that's possible. Has anyone been called in uncircumcision? Let him not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing. But what matters is the keeping of the commandments of God. Let each man remain in that condition in which he was called. Were you called while a slave? Do not worry about it. But if you are able also to become free, rather do that. For he who was called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freedman. Likewise, he who was called while free is Christ's slave. You were bought with a price. Do not become slaves of men. Brethren, let each man remain with God in that condition in which he was called. Notice the repeat of the theme and principle of verse 17. In verse 20, let each man remain in that condition in which he was called. Verse 24, let each man remain with God in that condition in which he was called. The point being that it matters not what condition you are in now or what condition you think you need to be in. It is not of concern to God. He called you regardless. He called you in your circumcision. He called you in your uncircumcision. He called you while a slave. He called you while free. He called you while married or single. Paul argues that we were bought with a price, concluding that we belong to God, not to other people's social conventions. Stop worrying about changing your circumstances and remain as you were when called. Is this a life sentence, to remain as we are? Is it a command to not change one's condition when called? A pertinent question if we're going to look at singleness next. Are we to be terminally single? Single till the day we die? Notice that Paul himself rules out the life sentence in verse 21. Were you called while a slave, do not worry about it. But if you are able also to become free, rather do that. If the opportunity for changing your circumstances comes up, go for it. But don't agitate to get out of slavery. Be content. Don't seek after freedom. In the same way then, Paul will argue, don't seek after marriage. Don't pursue it. Don't strive to change one's circumstances to meet preconceived ideas on holiness or serving God or being part of this world. How then does the principle to remain as you are apply to those who are not married? And does it apply to us today? Let's read verse 25 to 35 again. Now concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy. I think then that it is good, in view of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you should marry, you have not sinned, and if a virgin should marry, she has not sinned. Yet such will have trouble in this life, and I am trying to spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time has been shortened, so that from now on those who have wives should be as though they had none, those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, and those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it. For the form of this world is passing away. But I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. And his interests are divided. And the woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what is seemly, and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. We come now to Paul's opinion on singleness. why he thinks it's better if they remain as they are. However, there are two possible reasons we can ignore what Paul's saying here, that we can ignore Paul's advice. The first, that we'll deal with straight away, is that it is merely Paul's opinion, as he states in verse 25. It's only an opinion. The second, that we'll deal with later, is that it's specific to the Corinthian context, and therefore doesn't apply to us. Firstly, though, notice verse 25. Now concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who, by the mercy of the Lord, is trustworthy. Why has Paul started this way? Is he trying to shoot his own authority in the foot? Perhaps. Can we simply dismiss what Paul says here as just his opinion? Therefore we can take it or leave it? It's an important question. Does Paul have anything to say to us about this when he barely commands anything concerning this matter? What we actually see here is Pastor Paul with a couple of capital P's. This is Pastor Paul. Apostolic advice that Paul would not have us ignore. Because, A, he is trustworthy, as he says in verse 25, and B, his concern is wholly for the church's welfare. His stated aim in writing this is that the church be free from concern, to not worry, the same as his advice to the slave, if you recall. Notice in verse 28, if you marry, says Paul, yet such will have trouble in this life, and I am trying to spare you. Notice verse 32, but I want you to be free from concern. Verse 35, I say this for your own benefit. Is Paul no longer claiming inspiration? I think not. Though he has no command, notice in verse 40, he thinks that he also has the Spirit of God. The authoritative veracity of his opinion is based upon his apostolic credentials, and it's not to be dismissed lightly. Paul is taking a swipe at those who claim inspiration for their teaching about marriage and relationships, and he's placing his opinion at the head. So what is Paul's opinion? It's quite simple. It's spelled out very simply there, that in view of the present distress, it is good for a man to remain as he is. Paul spells it out even clearer in the next verse. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. If married, stay married. If single, don't look to get married. Don't seek marriage. Now, this is a very hard thing to say, because everyone put their hand up and said that they wanted to get married. How does one want to get married yet take Paul seriously here? You see, the desire for marriage is not sinful. It is built into creation. It is a good thing. Paul is not playing singleness off against marriage. The good is not the enemy of the best in this instance. Both are good. Marriage is good. Singleness is better. They are not opposed. Paul says that seeking marriage is to create worries for yourself. In fact, Paul goes on to say that marriage itself will create problems for you. And he doesn't want this for the church. And that's the reason he writes. Essentially, Paul is applying Jesus' own teaching. People should seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. What things does Jesus say will be given to you? He says that food will be given to you, and drink, and clothing, and things, the things of this world, of which marriage is a part. Marriage is part of this world. What does Jesus command? He commands us to not worry about the things of this world, not to seek after them, for they will be given to us. Marriage, food, clothing, drink, they will be given to us by God. As Jesus explains, he knows what we need. He knows we need food and clothing, and he will give it to us. Don't worry about it and don't seek after it. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these will be added to you. Simply seek his kingdom first and devote yourself to him. The second reason for dismissing this is that perhaps we're being semantic. Doesn't Paul say that it is in view of the present distress that people stay as they are? That it is a worrisome thing to want to change one's marital status at present? Perhaps Paul knows that there is persecution imminent for the people at Corinth, that the freedom they have in witnessing to Christ is no longer going to be possible. The future isn't as rosy as it has been. That martyrdom is on the cards. It's not good to want to get married when the next thing you know, your wife could be dragged off and you have to bow down to the emperor or she's going to get thrown to the lions. It's not good to be in that situation. It causes stress. Would it not? To seek to be married when persecution is coming. And I think that is definitely part of it, but it is also not all of it. Paul goes on to explain exactly what he means before returning to explain why singleness frees one from much concern. Follow me in verses 29 to 31. But this I say, brethren, the time has been shortened, so that from now on those who have wives should be as though they had none, and those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, and those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it, for the form of this world is passing away. The time has been shortened, therefore, and this is my translation, therefore, hang loose to the world. You won't find that in your Bibles. It's not there. Because the form of it is passing away. The scope of what Paul is saying here cannot be limited to a local persecution. The very form of this world is passing away. This is universal in scope. And as marriage is indeed part of this world, not the next, it too is passing away. Things are crumbling around them. Don't be bound up in one's wife, or happiness, or sadness. When Paul says, though, that the time has been shortened, what do you think he means? Does he mean that Jesus is coming soon, so there is no need to worry about marriage because there's not going to be enough time to bother with it? That is possible, but I don't actually think that's what he's saying. The time is not shortened quantitatively. It's not a shorter period of time that Paul is talking about. It's not Jesus' second coming, his return per se, that Paul's referring to. The time is shortened qualitatively. Perhaps I'll try and explain it clearer. It took me a fair while to actually get my mind around it. The time has been shortened refers back to the event that shortened it. Jesus' coming, death, and resurrection. The time has been shortened because Jesus has come. God is wrapping up his plans for creation. We are now in the end time. We are in the gospel age. Jesus has come. The time has been shortened. And that affects the way we live. We live as if not married, as if not mourning, as if not rejoicing or possessing fully. We hang loose to it all because God is wrapping everything up. The time has been shortened. So, after establishing that it is not good to concern oneself with the things of the world because they're passing away, Paul now goes on to say how this relates to marriage and singleness. Let's have a look at verses 32 to 35. But I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. And his interests are divided. The woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy, both in body and spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what is seemly and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. Essentially, Paul is saying that married people are distracted people. They are concerned about pleasing their respective spouses as well as pleasing the Lord. Their devotions are divided. Paul isn't saying, of course, that married people should not be like this, that they should not have divided devotions. He will not countenance any married Christian who does not love, care, and provide for their spouse as the first and foremost thing. He considers those who do not do that as worse than unbelievers. Nor is he saying that married people cannot devote themselves to the Lord. Of course they can. He regularly holds up Priscilla and Aquila as examples of married people who have devoted themselves to the Lord. What Paul does say is that single people can be more devoted to the Lord because they can be less concerned about the things of this world. They can be more devoted to the Lord because they are less concerned about the things of this world, things that are passing away. And speaking personally, I found this to be exactly true. Now that I am married, I have substantially less time to give my undivided devotion to Jesus. I don't begrudge that. I love devoting time to my wife. It is a good thing and something I enjoy. But practically speaking, I do have less time to devote to Christian service and ministry. Paul wants them to be content to remain as they are so that they can devote themselves fully to the Lord. Where does all this leave us then? To marry or not to marry? Is that the question? Well, in this instance, not really. If you are currently not engaged or in a steady relationship, Paul doesn't think you should concern yourself with questions of marriage. You will quite literally be worrying over nothing. Remain as you are. Do not seek a wife or a husband. Don't run around with a chook without a head, looking for a partner, a tolerably acceptable one, the perfect one. Definitely don't wander around with lists of prospective spouses that you can tick off and think, oh, gee, that'd be a good person to be associated with for the rest of my life. Seek first the Lord and do not worry about marriage. However, if in serving the Lord you meet someone who you think is special, with whom it would be wise to face the distress associated with this current age, who you are physically attracted to, as someone has said, looks aren't everything, but they are something. You do need to be physically attracted to your prospective spouse. Then and only then, start considering marriage. What advice does Paul have for those people? Those who have fallen in love? Let's read on. 36 to 38. If any man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly toward his virgin, if she should be of full age, and if it must be so, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin. Let her marry. But he who stands firm in his heart, being under no constraint, but has authority over his own will, and has decided this in his own heart, to keep his own virgin, he will do well. So then, both he who gives his own virgin in marriage does well, and he who does not give her in marriage will do better. Many of you will have wondered what I was reading out then, because the translations of those few verses vary quite substantially. Essentially, though, the gist of it is like this. If a man is acting unbecomingly toward his virgin, if they're going over the top or going too far, or in today's jargon, perhaps they are crossing the line sexually, this arbitrary line that Christian couples create that you can't go past. They're crossing the line, they're going too far. If it must be so and he wants to, let them marry. It most definitely isn't a sin. Paul's advice to those struggling with sexual frustration is to get married, not to exercise more self-control. Drawing lines around what is acceptable and unacceptable sexual behaviour, holding hands, kissing goodnight, kissing all night, Paul isn't interested in that. Paul won't have a bar of it. That's not what he's into. However, if sexual temptation is not a problem, and he who stands firm in his heart is not under constraint, has authority over his own will, has decided this in his own heart, to keep her a virgin, will do well. Note, four times Paul emphasises that it must be his own decision, not forced on him externally by the powers that be, the pressures that are in the Corinthian church. The pressure against marriage is not to decide the matter towards singleness. Don't be constrained to not marry, but if you're firm in your convictions and you don't have to, Paul says, it's better if you remain as you are. Stay single. Summing up, Paul's advice to those married is to enjoy all of its benefits and to not even consider separation. To those who are widowed but have found uncondoned companionship, to get married rather than to burn with shame. To those married to unbelievers, to stick it out for their sake, if they'll stay, but not to beat themselves over the head with guilt if they don't. To the engaged, to get married if struggling sexually, and to the singles, to not seek after marriage, to remain as they are, to not agitate to get in a relationship, because it will only increase the troubles you will have and decrease your devotion and service of God. So, are you willing to seek first his kingdom and not seek first a spouse? Will you heed Paul's advice and be content to remain as you are?